Welcome to the NCO Journal podcast. I'm Staff Sergeant Jared Woods. In this episode, the NCO Journal participates in a media roundtable discussion with the Secretary of the Army, Dr. Mark T. Esper. Some of the topics discussed with journalists from the Army, Military Officer, and National Guard magazines included talent management, Army Family Initiatives, and Soldier Lethality. Check it out.
Thanks for coming by today. It's good to catch up with you all. We could talk. I know you want to talk a number of issues, so do I. And just kind of start off where we've been in the past. The Army is still in the middle of a renaissance. That middle is probably at the front end of a renaissance. But I think as you have seen from our budget, we've made a lot of changes in our budget. We're generally getting good support from the Hill, certainly from the leaders, the chairman and ranking members of the defense committees. And so we're very excited about the path ahead. And it affects everything, how we man, train, equip, organize the force. I think we could talk about each one of those, man, train, equip, and organize. But a big part of it, too, is the families piece. And I asked Jason to print you off what we did from the family forum a couple months ago, but a number of initiatives we're doing there to really put the emphasis where it should be on our soldiers and our families. And I know there are a number of issues there. We can go in any direction. So I'll just stop there, and we can kind of open up for questions from all of you.
Well, thanks for making time for us. I know that you wanted to maybe talk about talent management, which is a good topic for Army Magazine as well. Can you talk about it in terms of maybe how it would work, how you find people, how you see this really coming together? And maybe within that, does that also involve the direct commissioning that you've talked about? How is that working? Have any of those happened yet?
I'll take the second question first. Yes, on cyber, we've directly commissioned, I think, six or seven, and we may have as many in the process right now. This is like the first or second year, so it will take time to get that going as it becomes an apparent option for many folks. So it is something we want to have in our toolkit, and like I said, we're using it now. It's just a matter of how do you get more exposure and recruit people along those lines.
Pardon me, six or seven is in cyber?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and where are those people? We can talk about that later.
We can get you details on where they are. They're probably at Fort Gordon if they're already come in, going through training and things like that, so if not out in the field by this point in time.
Okay.
The bigger picture is a talent management. It's actually twofold. One is right now we have a command and control personnel system, if you will. This would be a market-based personnel system, much like you all. You came from the Fayetteville Observer. I'm sure nobody told you to go from the Fayetteville Observer to what you're doing now. You probably said, wow, I've been doing this long, enough time. I feel like I've mastered it. I want to try something different. And so you went and you found a job somewhere. It was advertised or a friend told you, whatever the case may be. That will be in many ways how the new model for the Army will happen as well. We have a lot of officers on the system today. It's is it AIM 2.0? I'm getting briefed an update this afternoon. But whereby if you're a captain who is, you're halfway through your company command, you have assignment afterwards, you can go online and look for your next assignment. And you could apply to be a ROTC, was it APMS, or you may want to go be a trade-off basic training company commander, or you may want to go to a graduate school program, but it would be a process whereby you go and look on the availability of jobs within the Army that fit not just the core attributes like we have now. Right now you have two factors, right? If you're going to be a battalion escort in an infantry battalion, the two factors are you have to be a major and you have to be infantry. So now we're going to start looking at 20 plus factors. This gets to the talent piece of this, is understanding a person's knowledge, skills, behaviors, and preferences. And so that person would apply for a job. The employer on the other end, which would be the commanders and the PMSs and things like that, would then have a number of people they could look at and draw from based on not just a two-factor type of deal, but 20-plus factors to assess whether or not.
So how does the employer end up with what he or she needs if captains can choose where they want to go, and it might not be where the Army needs them? How does the Army feel?
Yeah. Well, again, I think the studies done by what's called OEMA at West Point, the Office of Economic Manpower, whatever, we can get the exact OEMA, but they've studied this in great detail. Their belief is 80% of the market will clear itself. In other words, and you will do it optimally, you'll optimize. And then it's the remaining 20%, which will likely be now the charge of HRC. as compared to the current model, where most people are command directed, and there are those lucky few who, who can work the system, who have patrons, if you will. They can get really good jobs, and then there are the others who don't, who are on the other end. But what we want to do is build a marketplace into it. So a commander now has, a commander doesn't get just assigned, get somebody assigned. He or she has much more voice in the system and can then look at a set of files that come into him or her, kind of decide, I want to talk to those three or four, meet with them, talk to them on the phone, and really make sure we have a good fit.
And sorry, real quick, does the commander also now, or the employer also now, have a wider picture of who that officer or soldier is?
Oh, absolutely.
What the talent
is. Yeah, sure, absolutely. So it could
be. They've got 20 factors, so the employer also has more to look at.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. It could be that. I'm sorry, your first name again?
Amanda.
So, Amanda, the reason why I asked Amanda where she's from is I'm from southwest Pennsylvania, and there's a large Polish population there, right? And a lot of people, I grew up in a very ethnic area where people still spoke the language they came from and stuff like that. So, but think about that in the context of talent. If you grew up in that area where I came from, and you put on your resume, I speak Polish, which is what, we don't track that stuff now. But if you spoke, if you said, I speak Polish, I want to be assigned to Europe, I've lived in Europe, by the way, as a kid because I was a brat or something like that. You start looking more attractive to a commander in Europe as compared to somebody who never had those experiences, doesn't speak a second language, things like that. So that's what we want to try is to capture not just your professional skills, but also your personal skills and traits. Or you may put in there, as you know, people do, I really enjoy the outdoors. I'm an accomplished skier. Well, my goodness, you might be very good for my old unit in Vicenza right there, where we did a lot of alpine, we had an alpine mission. So it's those types of skills where you can really fine-tune what you want from your officer corps, eventually your NCO corps as well, and we'll do it for civilians also. But we want to start with the officer corps. It's probably the most manageable.
Do you envision that system working the same across the total force? Would it be tweaked at all for the reserve components?
No, right now we're implementing, we see the system operating across the total force. Now, I say that with, there's always an asterisk when you talk about the other compos, and I served in the others. It's a little bit different because, like in the Guard, where I served in the Guard, you have unit vacancy promotions and things like that. But I think the thing is, we want to migrate as much as possible, give commanders and soldiers as much, choice is not the right word, but really try and get their preferences working with the system and allow them to make the choices, if you will, between that, again, rather than be command-directed. Again, it's a little bit different in the Guard because so much of the promotions within the Guard are local promotions, and a lot of people stay within their same unit, certainly within the same region. So it's probably a more limited marketplace, whereas with the regular Army, you could do it much broadly, much more broader because people are open for, global assignment. But I think we want to adapt the principles. Right now, the engine by which a lot of this will happen, which is called IPSE, the Integrated Pay and Personnel System Army, came out of testing earlier this year from the Pennsylvania Guard, and I think it's going to be exported to all the Guard over the next 12 months, 13 months. We can get you the details. Like, I don't keep track of those statistics. But we want that system to be the backbone for everything. And, again, that would be the ideal. Like I said, my experience, I served in both the D.C. and Virginia Guard. If there was a job I really wanted, it was in Oregon, I wasn't going to move to Oregon. So you're pretty much, unless you're willing to make moves like that or travel great distances, there's a limitation in terms of what that marketplace looks like.
Well, speaking of the Guard, as the Army pushes to increase medical readiness, as it introduces a new PT test,
mm-hmm.
There are issues for guardsmen that particularly live in rural areas that may not have great access to medical care, may not have gyms or facilities to train for the PT test.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about, are there concerns for folks that live in more rural areas? Is anything being done to sort of help improve their medical readiness or bring resources to them?
Well, the medical readiness they have available to them is what's available through TRICARE and different programs. And, of course, I'm going to assume that most have private insurance, right? So, that's the way the system is set up. On the physical fitness front, we are talking a lot to the Guard and Reserves. I speak to our respective directors on this. TRADOC has gone through great effort to make sure that, as they've outlined how to prepare for the ACFT, that there are any number of exercises, for all the exercises, there are things you can do without the deadlift bar, things you can do, to really allow you to get physically fit without using the equipment or buying the equipment or going to a gym. And so we're looking at all those options to make sure that we it's fair to everybody.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the talent management.
Sure.
So you'd mentioned the language skills is one of the things that you're doing. Are there other initiatives that you're doing, especially for officers?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there's a ton of things we're going to do on I don't want to focus on talent management because talent management is a piece of reforming the personnel system.
Mm-hmm.
I think talent management is, we can describe it as the engine or we can describe it as the backbone or whatever, but it's the market, it's talent management, it's a few other things. So for example, here's another example. How do we give officers an opportunity to take a break in service for a year or two? We have that now, but how do we make sure we expand it? It's well communicated. So if you're a captain, a female captain, you want to start a family, but you feel maybe too difficult while you're on active duty, maybe we give you the option to go in the reserve for a year or two or three, or maybe leave the service for a year or two or three, and then come back in, provided you haven't conducted any crimes, you're still physically fit, you're still medically ready, and without penalty. We'd have to restart your time clock, if you will, but give folks like that to take a career intermission and or move in between the components seamlessly so that it's not hard. I back to my story, for me, even moving between two separate guard units, two separate states, was a paperwork drill. It shouldn't be that hard. Or if you're going from, eventually I went from the guard to the reserve, that was a paperwork drill. We should be able to do that seamlessly. And right now we're not at that level of efficiency, and that's where IPSA will come in handy. But so there's that. There's a, in terms of officer management, we want to make sure we put equal emphasis on TRADOC assignments. So how do we get more of our top talent into TRADOC jobs, whether it's ROTC or basic training commands or other things like that? Anyways, there are a slew of initiatives that are related to this whole thing of personnel overhaul that really promise to deliver a better product at the end of the day. And I'm paying a lot of attention also to the commissioning sources and how we make sure that we're bringing in the right young men and women. Are we training and educating them properly? And then are we commissioning and graduating them in the best ways possible? And that's a whole different, that's a big, big subset of personnel management.
Have you gotten feedback from officers, like what they are most interested in, like the career intermission? Is that something that is really desirable?
Yeah, we hear that from some. We offer that now. It's not wildly. We probably could do a better job advertising it. Some people have taken advantage of it, but I think what you hear most, at least as I go around, and you'd have to talk to the talent management task force because they're doing a lot of work on this. What I hear most of all is more transparency with regard to assignments. I think more stability for the families in terms of assignments. So, for example, I'm fine with an officer staying at one location for more than 3 years. As long as they're performing their duties and they're continue to grow and the unit wants them, I don't see any problem with somebody staying at Fort Bragg for, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, or Fort Campbell, whatever the case may be. If that helps, particularly if it helps unit cohesion and performance and family stability, if the spouse has a job or the kids are in a good school. So there are changes like that that are outside the system, outside of kind of constructing a talent management system, that also impact the personnel system, if you will, right? Because now you'd have people homesteading in some ways. So homesteading may be the wrong word because it conveys maybe you'd stay at one place for your entire career. And for some MOSs, I can think of some right now where that happens, but because only certain types of units are there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about fewer PCS moves, right? Now, we have people now moving 8, 9, 10, 12, 13 plus times. That's too many times. I mean, in my short 10 years of active duty service, I must have moved 5 or 6. That's tough. And I think people want more stability, particularly as you get older in the Army, right? Older is not the right word. As you spend more time in the Army and as your kids up in the Army and things like that, you want more stability, particularly as they enter high school years. And for many folks, that's when it actually because the pace picks up. So,
and we're gonna let's go out to the NCO Journal, Sergeant Woods.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Secretary. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. With respect again to talent management, you mentioned that the Army is moving to where talent can be managed to echelon. at the unit level. So what advice would you give to NCOs or other leaders to help mitigate that human factor of favoritism or bias when trying to fill a particular position?
Favoritism or bias? Well, I think there's still going to be a competition, if you will, of resumes. If you know what I'm saying, if an employer, if the brigade sergeant major gets in a list of folks that he or she wants, or you know, for a position, I think there's still going to be the opportunity to compare resumes and see who's best, and there are different ways to do that. I think when you use the words favoritism or bias, it puts a negative tinge on it. I don't believe most people operate that way. I think most people are looking for the best person. But I also, on the other hand, I don't think it's wrong either that if you served with somebody in the past and you trust them and you know they're a performer, to pick them again. That's what happens in the civilian circle, commercial sector, private sector. You know, you build trust and rapport with individuals that you're comfortable with, and that's not abnormal. But we do have to make sure that there are safeguards built into the system. But again, I think the most important thing is for folks to have very competitive records, make sure they understand what the employer is looking for. And that's one of the things we need to work on the other end for the units is what are you actually looking for? And then I think, you know, the NCO, everybody has to be cognizant of all that. And then be clear with regard to what your preferences are in terms of your assignment.
Do you see a plan in place, or is there one, or a method to educate leaders about talent management and its importance or impact regarding aspects such as future assignments and retention of quality soldiers?
So we will need to develop a communications plan as we roll out aspects of this, that's for sure, a very heavy internal communications plan to make sure everyone understands. I know the sergeant major is deeply engaged in this as we do some other things. So, you know, what came out recently is the move to an OML-based system for NCO promotions, and that will happen over a period of time. But, yeah, we do. We need to make sure folks understand the system we're moving to and why it is and how they can operate well within it. I think, again, one of the things that folks are looking for is transparency in the system and making sure they understand what they're eligible to compete for. Yeah, I think the view is nobody said they disagree with this view, but the view is if we start taking into account more of people's preferences, you'll probably have your retention will probably be better off. I mean, we've all heard stories, either my time in the service I've heard it, or even now in this job, where people were told to go to assignment, they did not want to do it, and it ended up being their last assignment because it was just a not a good fit for them. They were unhappy with the process, whatever the case may be. But I think whenever you allow people more voice into the system, I think that's a good thing, and we believe that will actually help retention and in many ways help recruiting too.
One last question on the talent management for me is the timing of it. I would imagine this is something that is beginning under your watch. I would imagine it would have to evolve over time to really kind of be honed and refined. Is it so that to be clear, it's happening now with officers. You're starting with the officer corps.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it in terms of time, last year I spent a lot of my effort on AFC, Army Futures Command, and we were laying the foundation. I reestablished the Talent Management Task Force. We brought in a lot of people to stand that up. So this year I've been focusing, now that AFC is underway and doing well, I'm focusing more of my effort on talent management. It will take a number of years. We started last year with the officers and NCOs. I think the officer piece is much, much further along. Mm-hmm. And by the end of this year, I think we'll have everybody on the system. And then it's a matter of we got to make some other changes. It will take time. I want to be clear. I mean, that's one of the things I'm pleased about with General McConville being nominated as the next chief of staff. He has a lot of experience in this. He was a former G1. He's a big believer in talent management and everything we are doing. So, he and I will have, you know, enough time together to keep this moving along. So it will take time, but it won't end with me. It will be for my successor and my successor's successor to keep moving along. But I think in the end of the day, for an all-volunteer force in this day and age, it's the right way to go, and we need to go there.
Okay, on modernization, and I would imagine this would fall under maybe soldier lethality, CFT. What is the next piece of gear that soldiers are going to get in their hands? What's coming along?
Well, the enhanced night vision goggles, binocular, will come out this fall.
this fall.
Yeah, so that'll be a big one. We this summer we'll be testing the first a next generation squad weapon, automatic weapon. That'll be tested this year. And then I think between that weapon and then the rifle that is part that is right behind that, you know, you'll start seeing prototypes, I think, in the next 18 months, something like that.
Okay.
And so, but at the same time, we're continuing to improve helmets, lighter and stronger. I was up at NADIC a couple months ago and saw that. We're continuing to improve body armor, particularly for our women, making sure we have the right sizes and enough of them. So that's happening. What else came to mind? We talked body armor, night vision, weapons. I mean, there's all types of little. Then you start getting the smaller stuff.
Coming up in the next couple of years, would you say, or
yeah, I think
prototypes
so. Well, certainly, like I said, the goggles, the IVAS, which is the successor to the ENVGs. We're going to be testing them here very soon. So I think, you know, the breakout period will probably be in the the 22-23 period, where we'll really start getting it out to the field and to those folks who need it most, the infantry, the scouts, and things like that, along with improvements in the body armor.
Okay.
I mean, the combination of the weapon and the IVAS goggles will also change how we train, because the IVAS goggles will allow you to do virtual reality, enhanced reality training anywhere with these goggles. So you can put them on, you can link your squad together, and you could take any open location and do, you know, practice room clearing, because you would see an enemy scenario, you know, whether it's a village or a town or a city, whatever, against any threat, and you can put different...
It'd be a common picture for everyone.
It'd be a common picture for everyone. You would have adversaries, enemies in there, and you can repeat the battle drill over and over again. So it's the 25 bloodless battles that Secretary Mattis used to talk about, so we can better train our infantry. That'll be a big game changer, because that's not just equipment. It's now using the equipment to improve training.
Okay. And we've only got 8 minutes left, so I want
to keep moving so
we get everybody
I'll,
into the
I'll
question.
Answer more quickly.
Over to Drew.
Thank you. You
mentioned that that equipment is going to go out to scouts and infantry folks first. And I know that last week General McConville spoke about sort of bumping some guard units up on the list of where they have received newer equipment and newer vehicles in the past. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that just going to be on a case-by-case basis, or will the Guard be fielded newer equipment earlier than it has been in the past?
There's two things on this. One is on like the next generation squad weapon, every soldier in the Army will not get that. It is only going to go to like the infantry, the scouts, people who really need, MOSs that really need an enhanced weapon, because of the nature of their mission, they are engaging the bad guys. So what that means is, if you're infantry in either the regular Army or the Guard, you will get that weapon, which means there will be many, many soldiers in a regular Army that will never see that weapon, will never touch it, and the Guard will have it. So it's a different way of, because they're expensive, they're complicated, and not everybody needs it. So you'll see infantry and scouts, like I said, in the Guard and regular Army, get those weapons. And they will get them in many units in the Guard and Reserve for sure, and regular Army will never see them. So that's one distinction we're making here. The other thing is we are looking. I've asked the Director of the National Guard to work with the broader Guard to see, you know, which Guard units are on the tip fits, the right timelines for deployment. And we certainly, if you're an early deployer, we want to make sure that you have, you know, you have the top line equipment, if you will. The key to equipping is not based on compo or based on this or based on that. It's based on where you are in the queue to deploy on the various op plans. And for any number of the op plans, I haven't done a count, but you have all three components, units from all three components deploying early. And that's the way we want to approach it.
Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, so my last question for you is about BRS.
About what?
The blended retirement.
Okay, yeah, right.
So now that it is in place, I'm sure you've been tracking how it's going to affect officers. So I just wanted your thoughts on that, and then how are you going to try and retain like mid-career officers?
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons why we have to go to a better system for personnel management, because more than ever, it's an all-volunteer force.
I mean, it used to be that you were certainly handcuffed in at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to what you could take away from retirement. I didn't take anything away when I left the regular Army in terms of retirement, but it's different. And I think it puts the onus on us to figure out how do we retain the right mid-career officer, so the right in terms of talent level, the right in terms of numbers, and the right in terms of certain skills. Yeah. So we'll look at each of those on a case-by-case basis. There are a variety of tools you can use, but I think most of the people I talk to aren't in for the money. They're in because they like the job they're doing, and they like who they're doing it with, and they like the mission. That's, you know, I've been all around the Army. When you talk to folks, that's normally what it comes down to. And the reason why people leave is not, again, it's usually because they got an assignment they didn't like, or maybe their family issues, things like that. So we got to take into account. I think it makes us sharpen our pencils, and it's another compelling reason why we need to really move to a different personnel system, one that's not based on an industrial age system, but one that's based on the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we've got 2 minutes left, Sergeant Woods, for your final question.
No problem. Thank you again, Mr. Secretary. Just to switch gears for a quick second, but in regard to our the Army's enlisted professional military education system and how the Army is going to be beginning to place more emphasis on writing at our NCO leadership centers of excellence, such as basic leader course or senior leader course, how important of an attribute do you believe that authorship and writing is to critical thinking and the overall being of a leader?
Well, the Sergeant Major, we haven't talked much about that recently. He and I both are big believers, as is the Chief, in terms of NCO professional development. I think we've made a lot of strides in terms of improvements made to all the different courses. But look, I think as for any leader, whether you're an officer, a warrant officer, an NCO, is you have to be a good communicator. It's not just the verbal word, it's the written word. So I think it's important that all leaders at all levels be very good communicators. For some it's more important than others. And I think for the written word, if you want to be able to write an effective NCOER, you got to be a good writer. If you want to be able to write an effective op order that your soldiers can understand, you have to be a good writer. And good writing means you can convey a thought clearly and concisely. And so I think it's important that we think about all the different skills needed at different levels of leadership. You know, again, for a senior NCO, it's probably more important that you are an effective communicator than it is that you know all the latest camouflage techniques. So it's we got to look at it that way in terms of what do we need, what do NCOs at different levels of leadership need to be effective in the roles they have, and I think it's part of a continuing education for all of us.
Mr. Secretary, thank you, sir, for your time.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, and that's all we have.
Okay, thank you all. Good to see you.
Thank you.
My fellow NCOs, you can join the conversation by joining us at facebook.com/NCOjournal and Twitter at NCOjournal. Put your knowledge to print, submit articles, and get published through the NCO Journal. Until next time, I'm Staff Sergeant Jared Woods.